You are listening to the Huddle Up Podcast, part of the USA Today Podcast Network. I'm your host, Corey Bonini, and we're here to talk fantasy football for the 2018 NFL season. Welcome to Week 6, Fantasy Football Faithful. I am joined by... I am by myself today. Ryan is out with a little touch of sickness today, so I decided to fly solo. So hopefully we can buzz through this pretty quick for everybody. You'll only have to deal with me today, unfortunately. Or maybe fortunately, depending on your perspective. The overarching theme to start this episode is going to be a reminder. Be patient. We're entering Week 6. Don't overreact. We touched on this a little bit last week. Here's a good example of not wanting to overreact. And it's also a good example of how cruel fantasy football can be. In one of my leagues that's rather competitive, I've scored at least 172 points in PPR, regular 10 starting lineup player composition. I have averaged more than 182 points a week, and I am below 500, sitting here at an ugly 2-3. Don't fret. It's easy to get upset. It's easy to get frustrated, especially when you lose the close ones. I've lost 3 games by a total of 6 points. That is hard to swallow. I have had more points scored against me than the number 2 team that is 5-0 has scored on their own. Hard to deal with. Don't overreact. Don't make a big deal out of it. Put your head down. Make the same wise decisions that you did to get you into that kind of position. You obviously did something right. You drafted a strong enough team to average 182 points a week. You obviously did something right. You picked the right players, the correct lineup every week to get to that level. I scored 191 points a couple weeks ago without a tight end. It's amazing. Sometimes you just don't have luck on your side. But the point being, if you're patient, if you're doing it the right way, in the end, you will come out on top. You have to control what is in your control, right? It sounds so silly and cliche, but it's true. What else can you do? I can't change the fact that my opponent scored 200 points against me when I scored 191 points. 191 points almost every week of the season will beat every other team in your league. That's just how it goes. But sometimes you get the short end of the stick. So you regroup, you come back, you reassess. And you try to find ways to just claw and claw and claw and claw. So hopefully this week I can catch a win, get back to 500. I'm still even at 2-3 sitting in the playoff picture. But, you know, you want that first round bye. You want to be able to have one fewer game than your opponents and, you know, on your march to the championship. But if you don't, it's not the end of the world. Everything starts from scratch once you get into the playoffs. We're obviously many weeks away from that yet. But it should still be in the back of your mind. It should still be part of the focus of every game matters, especially from this point forward. So be wise. Don't be as inclined, depending on your situation, maybe to take a silly flyer. And if you do, understand the risk you're taking. There's nothing wrong with going out on a limb. I mean, there's really nothing wrong with the go big or go home mentality, as long as you're aware of what you're doing and you're making a smart decision and the best possible decision. Don't just make some willy-nilly decision that's going to put you in harm's way. Have some sound logic behind why you make the moves you make, and if it doesn't work out, you did the best you could in that scenario. While we're at it, one more example of sometimes we need to take our own advice and not overreact. In the words of Aaron Rodgers, relax. That's what I should have done last week. I was having a conversation that turned almost into a pretty good debate there with Ryan about what to do with Aaron Rodgers, about what to do with Aaron Rodgers the rest of the way. And my take was, he is no longer a guaranteed must start with the way he was playing entering week 5, sitting in the middle of the league in fantasy points, injured, having banged up wide receivers, an offensive line that's not the greatest, no running game to speak of. All of that was true, but you have to understand that he is still Aaron Rodgers. We've seen so many miraculous plays from him throughout the years. We've seen, going back to week 1, look what he did against Chicago in the second half. That was nothing short of legendary. Sometimes it is easy to get caught up in the hype and caught up in the moment and want to be ahead of the curve and make some type of proclamation of, this is the year Aaron Rodgers goes down as a bad fantasy pick for your top quarterback. That wasn't necessarily my intention, but after 4 straight games of seeing, 3.5 games of seeing anything but what we're used to seeing from Aaron Rodgers, I was awfully worried, and rightfully so. Be patient. Stay the course. Ryan, I have to admit it if you're listening, you were right. Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. You drafted him as high as you did for a reason. Stick with him. Play him. Don't worry about the matchup. Every chance you have to have Aaron Rodgers in your lineup gives you a fighting chance to win that game. Fair enough. I was wrong. Let's move on to some news items. There's only so many times that I can admit that I was wrong, especially admit to Ryan that he was right. There are reports coming out of the Jacksonville area. Leonard Fournette could miss through the Week 9 bye, which we've already talked about. I don't know that that's really going to change how you handle the situation in any way. If anything, maybe you can get him cheaper in a trade, if that's your prerogative. I still think there's value there as the season wears on. He does have several good matchups, but the re-injury factor has to be a terrifying concern for most fantasy gamers at this point. If you were one of those owners who were smart to back him up with TJ Yeldon, or you were lucky enough to pick up Yeldon off the waiver wire, you have yourself a pretty good starting back for a couple of weeks. I'm not crazy about the matchups, but he's the primary guy, at least until Jamal Charles gets up to speed. I don't see a chance where Jamal Charles is really a fantasy factor in week 6, but once you get into week 7, he has a chance in PPR. He's not worth playing in standard, but there is a chance against Houston in PPR. Week 8, you have Philadelphia. I'm not crazy about that in any scoring format. If he plays well in Week 7, you could at least consider him playable in a deep league in Week 8. But if he doesn't show any signs of life in Week 7, there really isn't much hope for him in Week 8. Then they have that Week 9 bye. Beyond that, there's probably no chance Jamal Charles is worth anything in fantasy, especially if Fournette is healthy. In fact, it'd be awfully surprising if they kept him on the roster. There's a chance they would, simply because they lost Corey Grant, and that would leave them obviously thin at the position. Last week, we ended up running long on the podcast, so I cut out a segment we did on Eric Ebron. And the gist of it was simply, where has this been his entire career in the NFL? He was a high draft pick in Detroit, between a case of the drops, between a problem with staying on the field and simply being lost at times in the shuffle of all of the weapons Detroit had, Ebron never emerged to being the star caliber first round talent that we all expected he could have been. Then he comes over to Indianapolis. Change of scenery. As I said in last week's podcast that didn't air, sometimes all it takes is that new venue. You leave a losing culture in Detroit. You enter what has been a traditional winning culture in the last 15 years or so in Indianapolis. You come in and you see the pictures and the championship banners. You see the Tony Dungys and you see the Peyton Mannings and the Marvin Harrisons and the Reggie Waynes and the Edgerrin James, and I could go on and on and on. It changes sometimes. There's a degree of humanity that doesn't factor into fantasy football prognostication. And it's unfortunate because there's really no way to know for sure unless you are best friends with Eric Ebron. Or have some type of bizarre inside connection into his world. Knowing those types of situations and having any way to translate that into fantasy football advice is virtually impossible. So this week we have didn't practice Wednesday, didn't practice Thursday. Shin injury, quad injury, ankle injury, knee injury. Holy cow. Ebron probably plays a limited snap count. I don't have the feeling that any one of these individual injuries are enough to keep him out. That said, the totality of injuries could do the job. If he plays, he has earned the right to be a low-end lineup submission this week. I don't think you should be crazy about playing him. If you have clearer paths to getting points in the tight end position, absolutely consider it. But check those final inactives just to be safe. Some of the bigger news of the week was LeSean McCoy trade talk. Philadelphia's name was tossed out there as a possible spot for a reunion. The Eagles lost Jay Ajayi, and Darren Sproles has not been able to stay healthy at 35 years old, and really, can anyone expect him to be? Corey Clement comes back from injury for Week 6. Wendell Smallwood has played well so far in the absence of Clement and with Sproles out. Looking forward, there's a fair amount of confidence to be had in both players. Way back into the preseason, Corey Clement was one of my favorite sleepers. I love the situation. I love the potential. He has flashed, but he isn't a guy who can do it all by himself. And in today's NFL, that's very common. That does not mean he can't be a capable fantasy contributor week in and week out. His best value would be in PPR league. If McCoy were to land in Philadelphia, it automatically increases his value, and it helps stabilize the offense. He's coming off his best week in Buffalo this season, which doesn't say much. It took him 24 carries to get to 85 yards. Yikes. If you have an opportunity to land McCoy in a fantasy trade on a cheap price, It's worth entertaining. But if you get stuck with him in Buffalo, yuck. I really wouldn't want anything to do with that the rest of the way. In fact, it's a little surprising with all of their passing woes they haven't involved him more in the receiving game. As he's becoming healthier each week, perhaps that will change. For now, he's barely playable, and that's unfortunate. The Green Bay Packers should have some help with Randall Cobb and Geronimo Allison coming back to practice on Thursday, and it looks like they're ready to play in Week 6. Both players have enough fantasy value, there's enough meat on the bone, even with Davante Adams and Jimmy Graham, that those two guys, with a pretty strong matchup against San Francisco, could add to fantasy lineups, especially if you're desperate with injuries or a bye. The offense will still run through Davante Adams, Jimmy Graham will still get his, and Aaron Rodgers having to wear a little bit bigger brace on his knee, that could be a problem. We saw before the Detroit game, he wasn't moving very well and he had that larger brace. Reports are he may have to go back to it after using a smaller one in his blow-up game against the Lions, so stay tuned on that one. It really shouldn't be a huge factor in your determination whether or not to play Cobb, whether or not to play Allison. Cobb is a safer play, but Allison does have value. Washington Redskins running back Adrian Peterson. He's expected to play through a partially dislocated shoulder, but the matchup against Carolina is just average. I wouldn't feel compelled to put him in my lineup. Perhaps if you were in a touchdown only or a scoring heavy league and you were desperate for a body, he could have a chance. If he wasn't injured last week, he likely would have seen the carrier on the goal line that led to a Capri Bibbs touchdown. The schedule stinks for him the rest of the way, as we've discussed, and we've probably seen the best out of him so far in 2018. We've also recently on the podcast talked about the Seattle Seahawks backfield. Chris Carson is the lead guy, and it showed last week. Mike Davis filled in admirably 2 weeks ago when Carson was out with an injury after he had a monster workload the week before. Davis is still seeing enough work to matter. He had 12 carries last week, and he actually out-carried Carson in the red zone. This week, Pete Carroll came out and said that he likes seeing an agitated, frustrated Rashad Penny, and that's right where he wants him. Pete Carroll's known as a rah-rah style coach, and he's good at motivating players. But he's also really good at rewarding players who don't have big price tags associated with their name in a high contract, or they don't have a high first-round draft pick billing like Penny does. Somebody like Carson or Davis, if they play well and they outplay and they outpractice a first-round pick, he has zero qualms about putting them into a lineup and relying on them. And that's something that can't be understated. Even if you hear the coach speak of he's trying to help motivate Penny and get Penny to be hungry and try harder and be better, even if Penny is trying harder and is playing better, that's awfully tough to rely on at this point in fantasy. I don't think he belongs on a roster unless you have enough room to stash him, because this is the fourth best remaining strength of schedule in the NFL. Check him out. If he's on your wire and you have that space, I can see adding him. I wouldn't really go out of my way or drop a player who's regularly a lineup option. I mentioned a moment ago about LeSean McCoy being a possible trade candidate if you're looking for buying somebody on the cheap. Other guys that I've been discussing lately that would be worth looking into: Andy Dalton. He has the sixth best remaining strength of schedule for quarterbacks. Dalvin Cook. He struggled through injuries. He hasn't been himself. He was coming off the ACL tear. The offensive line hasn't been great. That's the biggest concern with him and in Minnesota in the short term, is that offensive line. If they can't get it sorted out, that would be the issue. But he has the ninth best remaining strength of schedule, and if there's a frustrated Cook owner in your league, you probably could get him away for a cheaper price than you think. Jordan Howard has the seventh best remaining strength of schedule, and I'm interested in seeing how they use him. They had the bye week. Maybe they can find a way to be more creative and take advantage of his strengths. I'm not sure that he necessarily fits the system in an ideal sense. We've seen so many guys come out of that offensive system back to Kansas City, have success, and be fantasy relevant that it's hard to imagine that somebody as talented as Howard doesn't find a way to get it together by the end of the year. So if you can land him at a reasonable price, I think you have a quality RB2 in the second half. It may cost a little bit more than you want to pay to get John Brown off of the hands of his current owner, but if you can, we're talking about the best remaining strength of schedule for wide receivers. He is the home run hitter, but he's still involved in the short and intermediate passing game. They like to get the ball into his hands and let him create some yardage after the catch. I don't know that I'd be overly excited to land him, but if you're desperate at wide receiver and you have some playable chips that you could use in a trade package, he'd be worth landing. I wasn't a fan of Jarvis Landry entering the season, and it was mainly because I expected Tyrod Taylor to be the starting quarterback for the majority of the year. Now that Baker Mayfield is the starting quarterback, Landry gives a lot of fantasy upside. He has the fourth best remaining strength of schedule. Josh Gordon is no longer a factor. Rashad Higgins was starting to take over for Antonio Callaway on the outside, but now he's injured for 2 to 4 weeks with an MCL sprain. Callaway is a talented player in his own right, but he's inexperienced after missing all of 2017, and he's a rookie. Landry could be a walk-off home run for owners who are looking for that final playoff piece. Jared Cook has the fifth best strength of schedule, but he has been all over the map for fantasy purposes this year. In the past, he's always been a tease. We've seen up, we've seen down, we've never seen a lot of consistency in terms of quality fantasy production. We've seen a lot of consistency on the other end of the spectrum. He fits the offense well, and there's a lot of reason in my mind to view him as a reasonable low-end, number one fantasy tight end the rest of the way. You will have some bumps, but the bad is still he's catching five or six passes. That's not a horrible thing to have in a year where the tight end position has been dreadful. This week, I'll go through a few of the start and sit questions I've received from viewers. Taylor Gabriel or Cordarrelle Patterson in PPR? That one is intriguing to me because Gabriel comes back from the bye week. He was playing well before. He's a big play guy, somewhat of an all or nothing candidate, though. Patterson has scored the last couple games. He looks pretty good, but he's also going to get lost in the shuffle at times. Now that Julian Edelman is back, Rob Gronkowski is starting to find his way a little bit. Josh Gordon is starting to find his way a little bit. James White has become a dominant factor out of the backfield. It just seems like one of those situations where the stars have to align for Patterson to be a fantasy contributor. I'm playing it safe this week and going with Gabriel, but Patterson probably has a hint more upside because of that matchup. Another PPR question. Willie Snead, Alfred Morris, or Aaron Jones? Morris immediately jumps out because he doesn't have Matt Breida to contend with for touches. However, it's against the Green Bay Packers and it's at Lambeau Field. If Green Bay, now that they're getting healthier at wide receiver, jumps out to an early lead, that almost removes Morris from the game plan and it makes him a very risky fantasy contributor. I'd be more inclined to take my chances with Willie Snead since it's PPR and hope that in a divisional matchup, he gets away with a few underneath looks or perhaps even sneaks into the end zone. He's had double-digit points several times. I don't think you really have much to worry about as far as a goose egg goes. Aaron Jones is probably the biggest home run. I like the matchup, but he just isn't getting enough touches to make me feel comfortable. If you're in a position to go for broke, Aaron Jones is the play. If you think that comfort is where you'd rather be and you want the safe points, Snead is a smarter choice. With Rashard Higgins out, Antonio Callaway should see several targets this week. In fact, he may see a season high in volume. It's entirely possible. And the question mark here is Callaway or Christian Kirk? Kirk's gone over double digits in PPR in two of his last three games, and he's in a situation where they may have to throw quite a bit to keep up with the Minnesota offense. However, I have a hard time believing on the road Josh Rosen is going to be able to get it done in a consistent way and make Kirk a valuable, safe fantasy play. So, neither player is truly safe. Kirk gives you a little bit more security. I have to think that he, for as bad as the Minnesota Vikings have played against the pass in recent weeks, they won't be that shabby against a rookie quarterback on the road. Callaway is the boomer bust. Kirk is a little safer. This one doesn't specify if it's PPR or not. So if you're in a standard scoring league, Callaway's my guy. If you're in a PPR league or a half-point PPR league, I give Kirk the edge by just a hair. This question does specify standard scoring over PPR. Corey Davis or Jordy Nelson? I'm going to say Jordy Nelson. It may be a little obvious. He has three straight games with touchdowns, which makes me a little bit nervous that perhaps he doesn't score this time. The targets have been there to a degree. He has at least four catches in those three games. The yardage, other than that monster game against Miami in week three, has been in the 40s, so that's not great. But we're talking about Corey Davis, a guy who has one career regular season touchdown, and he certainly isn't somebody you would want to consider to be a strong play against the Baltimore Ravens. This one also doesn't say scoring system, so we'll break it down for both. Dede Westbrook or Pierre Garçon? Garçon is a better play in PPR, but we're not talking a great deal here. You're looking at maybe 9 or 10 points. I'd be shocked if he got into the end zone. Dede Westbrook is a bigger play, is a big play threat and gives you a higher ceiling. And regardless of the scoring system, if you're going for broke, he's the better candidate. I just don't know that you can necessarily count on him in a PPR league as being guaranteed a slam dunk for more points than Garçon. If you can take that 8, 9, 10 point range out of Garçon and be happy with it, to me that's the smarter play. I'm going with Westbrook in 9 out of 10 scenarios just because I like to roll the dice when I have those you know what you're going to get kind of guys versus those blow the doors off the defense possibility type of guys. So I'm siding with Westbrook without knowing anything more about the lineup itself. And every week we try to do a rapid fire segment about would you start or sit this player. Since I'm the only one speaking today, we'll get right through it. OJ Howard, knee brace, limited practice Thursday, uncertain to play at this point against Atlanta. Great matchup. If he's active, I think he's at best a low-end desperation play. If you have nothing else to work with at tight end, I wouldn't start him. I'd look for something a little safer on the wire or if you have another tight end to use. Marcus Mariota against the Baltimore Ravens. No interest in that whatsoever. I think maybe the ceiling is somewhere around 230 and two touchdowns. Probably at least one turnover. Rushing-wise, maybe he's in the 40-yard range. He's always a threat to find the end zone with his feet. I just don't want to take that chance. I think that's more of a bonus than something you bank on, sitting him all day long. Philip Lindsay versus the Rams. Wow. I think in PPR, you take the chance on him. I'm not crazy about the overall matchup. I think the Rams, for all of their struggles in the last couple of weeks on defense, can still play close enough against what Denver does on offense to keep that system under wraps and not give Lindsay too many chances. So I'm going to lean sit him unless you have really shaky running backs overall. CJ Uzomah against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tyler Kroft was filling in for Tyler Eifert, and now he too may not play. He was injured in week 5, has a brace or a walking boot on. Not excited about his chances of playing this week, so Uzomah is kind of an interesting guy. He reminds me of what Jermaine Gresham may have been, or what he could have been. Uzomah has a little bit of wiggle to him for a big man, and he's pretty good over the middle. His hands are decent enough. Pittsburgh is dreadful, just miserable against tight ends. And I would say absolutely start him if you're desperate, if you maybe had O.J. Howard, or perhaps you went from, maybe you're on the third string tight end yourself for the Bengals. You had Eifert and you lost him, and now you lost Kroft. And Uzomah is an interesting target, I suppose. I have no worries if you're desperate to play him, because let's face it, that's what you have to be if we're talking to C.J. Uzomah. And long-term, though, number 3 remaining strength of schedule, I'm interested in him. I think there's a chance here long-term. C.J. Beathard versus the Packers, I'm not of the mindset that this actually turns into a shootout. Probably combined score somewhere around 34 Green Bay. That's 34 points, not 34 of them. And maybe in the mid-20s, if you want to call that a shootout, then you're welcome to it, but If you get 3 touchdowns out of the offense of San Francisco, I'll be pretty surprised. I say he's a low-end start, and you got to be really desperate. Maybe you had Drew Brees, and somehow you lost a backup quarterback. Or it seems like it would be an awfully precarious situation to be in where you're looking at him as the starting option. If the price is right in DFS, perhaps he's someone you could consider for a total flyer play. Trey Burton versus Miami. Wow. In Miami, they're pretty good against tight ends. Burton's coming off the bye week. 2 of his last 3 games have been strong. And that third one was respectable. I think you have to play him. There's enough reason to think that with the creativity and the play calling from Matt Nagy that he's a threat to find the end zone just about any week at this point. And if it's a bad game, a bad game's probably only 6 or 7 PPR points. I think that's somewhere in the lower tier of acceptability for a tight end right now. And we're going to talk about a kicker. Mason Crosby versus the 49ers. Can you trust Mason Crosby? I'm going to stick with him. He's been so good for so many years. Let's just face it. He had a terrible, terrible day. And you have to think that when you're a kicker and all eyes are on you and you miss one and then you miss another one and then you miss another one and then yet another one. And then they keep going. At some point, it just becomes a comedy of errors. And you have to think that the pressure for that moment was just too much. And it gets in a guy's head. Look, everybody, no matter what your career or occupation is, you have bad days. I mean, look, I was the guy who said that you can get away with sitting Aaron Rodgers last week. That's not a career highlight, you know? So play Mason Crosby if you have him. The matchup, though, I'm not sure you're going to get much more than extra points out of him. I would look to fade him simply because of the matchup, not because of his horrible game in week 5. I have a couple of guys this week that weren't included in the list. I touched on Antonio Callaway as an option in the he or Christian Kirk question from one of the viewers. I like him this week. Against LA, they've given up the most points per catch, not to be confused with the most points per reception. I'm saying most points per catch as in the highest average result per reception. Niles Paul against the Dallas Cowboys. He replaces Austin Seferian Jenkins in Jacksonville. Dallas has been pretty good against tight ends, but they also haven't had a lot of great matchups to be concerned with there. If you get 6 catches, 50 yards, which is about the average of what Dallas has allowed this year, consider that a win. 11 PPR points is a solid day if you're down to starting Niles Paul, let's face it. And Jeff Heuerman of the Denver Broncos against the Los Angeles Rams, they haven't allowed a touchdown on 28 catches to the tight end position, but this is the 8th best place to find receptions, 7th best place to find yardage. Perhaps they allow him to work the middle of the field while they're worried about covering the wide receivers on the outside. So there you have it for week 6. If you have any questions, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at The Huddle. And if you want to sign up for The Huddle, you can use the podcast18 code. That's podcast18 and receive $10 off our already discounted rate. That'll carry you through the rest of the season and you have full access to all of our sleepers, busts, waiver wire, rankings, start bench tool, you name it. We have you covered to get you right through the rest of the season and win a championship. Thank you for joining. This is Corey Benigni saying good luck in week 6.